My name's Steph and I'm an addict.
Hi, Steph.
It's just funny. Someone earlier said to me, am I nervous before a chair, you know, even after a bit of recovery? And really funny, I said, yeah. And I say yes, because that's my connection recovery, you know, having emotions. Because when I have emotions, I have a connection with other people, you know, and I understand that now. I didn't understand that for many years, you know, because from a young age, I cut emotions off. I sort of felt them. They were either really extreme. So to deal with the extreme ones, I shut them off altogether and didn't realize it was not to blame or anything, but part of my story, that was part of my addiction. And it's really nice because I can connect with Kelly's emotion and her story, and I really can connect with that now. From a young age, I couldn't connect with that stuff, you know. I still grew up in a house for some reason, it was full of fear. It was really funny. Somebody just asked me about my name. And, you know, for a child, there was distrust, there was lies, there was deceit. You know, for whatever reason, my mum had all this deceit. Like, I find that I went to get a driving license, it's really funny. I went to get a driving license at 17, and then there was no such person. I'd been going to school under that name, and in the days you could do it, I'd had this name, Richard Stevenson. I went to school on it, and I tried to get a driving license and was told there's no such person, to find out I had another birth certificate with another name on it. You know, it was my mum decided to do it to sort of cover up some kind of pain and something happened to her, which was really weird. So, yeah, so there was a lot of deceit, and it's really weird. And growing up in the 60s, sort of in Brixton, you know, there was all the racism going out, and I identify with it now and deal with it. My mum having a child out of wedlock and all the stuff that, and how it affected her. For recovery, I've gained some understanding. But yeah, so from a young age, there was certain feelings, and the feeling I knew was fear, you know, and I suppose it was anxiety. I only just understand what anxiety is. It was fear and it was anxiety, you know, and I lived with it from a young age as a child. And what I done, I learned to adapt. So I learned certain ways to adapt, you know, to my situation. And I learned them ways later on, all sort of suited me in my addiction, I found out. You know, it's really weird. From a young age, my mum never used to let us out to play. She was really distrustful. And it was confusing the child because she didn't like, she's distrustful of black people, and I was black, so it confused me. You know, she's distrustful around everyone. She didn't let us go out to play because you don't play with them kids because they're bad. No, so we had all these mixed messages that come in and interjunctions that came into our heads. So it was quite confusing as children, you know. And even now I've just realised that from, like, you're supposed to go to school at a young age. I went to school when I was 9, you know, that was it, because she kept me home to look after my brother. So I became a young adult taking care of another child, you know. And it's quite confusing, but it's how it was a norm. It's what we done, you know. So growing up in this household, and my first experience, when I can say, was addiction, was before that with drink. You know, in Caribbean families, they give you baby sham, and they gave you rum, and they gave you all these drinks, you know, and it was all normal, and they want to get drunk. And I think for me, I'm looking back as a kid, because they were embarrassed at what they were doing. So if they got you drunk, it didn't matter. And also, it kept you quiet. You know, young kids driving around, we get them drunk, they're quiet. The kids are quiet and they sit there and they don't say nothing. You know, and that's how it was. So I grew up from a young age with alcohol, it was normal. But I didn't understand, because my mum could drink one, she'd drink once and then she wouldn't do it again. Like at Christmas, she'd have a drink and a rat again. You know, I remember as a kid stealing the drink. So we had Advocar, and try filling Advocar with water, it doesn't really work, you know, it doesn't look good. But she never ever noticed, and Harvey's Bristol Creams. I remember all these drinks that I had, you know, and what they done, they gave me a sense of warmth. Well, I talked about the emotion, they gave me a sense of connection with something. You know, I felt okay in my skin. When I heard Coming to Delusion, I heard it. You know, and I could listen to records about feeling comfortable in skin. It made me feel comfortable with who I was. You know, and as I said, after that, my earliest addiction was, we wasn't allowed out to play, you know. And I remember getting into school at 9, and not knowing, feeling a lot of shame, because I was given number one books and people had number four. So I don't want to be a number four. So I learned to read as quick as I could. I played up, I argued, you know. Lucky I weren't labelled with ADHD or something in them days, but I played up, I was called a bad child, so I got these messages that stuck with me. You know, and I liked their messages, because I'd been in a house where it was abusive, so I liked these negative strokes I got, you know, it suited me. So being called a child was good to me. I would be as bad as you want, you know. But in the early ages, I learned that my mum, I was really, I looking back now, she wouldn't let us get out to play. So way down at school, I got seven friends, and I can remember every one of their names now, because in my logic, if I had different friends, my mum was embarrassed, I'd be able to go out the weekends. And what it was because I'd be out of that fearful house. I'd be out of that place with fear and anxiety and beatings and shoutings and all that stuff. And I'd get out of there, you know. And yeah, it's sad. I've done a lot of work over it to look at it, you know, and what it was and the pain of it. But I also, not to blame, but I can understand where my addiction took me and why drugs was a beautiful thing, you know. And I remember from an early age, at 14, there was an incident. Because I used to, when I found fellowship, NA, they were saying go, because I went to somewhere, I wasn't that lucky, because I was incarcerated. I got treatment in prison, you know, because I wasn't one of them luxury ones who went to lovely treatment centres. And I was laughing the other day because I went to a friend of mine, I went to this treatment centre that had a swimming pool, it was all nice, had this big luxurious field, you know. I didn't have that luxury. I was one of them addicts who couldn't stop using, you know. I remember the only time I went into a detox here, I was there, and what happened? As soon as I thawed out, the fear set in, you know, the anxiety set in, you know, that negative thinking set in. You know, I didn't understand it at the time, and I'd go and use, you know. So, yeah, I just couldn't do it out here. It was really difficult for me to do it out here. So, where was I? Yeah, so from a young age, as soon as I found substances, as I said, it made me settle. You know, it made me calm. I felt part of the world. So growing up from a young age, I found different people. You know, I found people who were similar to me. You know, I remember being young and hanging around the punk rockers. You know, I was a black gentleman from Brixton. My mum used to come and find me from school, and someone told me the other day, because I found one of these people on Facebook, he said, you used to come around there in your school uniform at 14, sitting around squats, drinking VP wine and stuff like that, taking Tunnel. You know, I remember first time I had Tunnel, for me to get out of my pain, it was obliteration. I used to go to a club over here called Babes, you know, at 15, and what happened is I'd take these things, I'd wake up, and I know what happened, and people would go, what a great night, you know, and that was it for me. You know, there was no middle ground for me. You know, I was one of them ones that I always say, I'd take it, and then I'd ask what it was, you know, there was no fear. No anxiety. It was like a death wish at times when I think about my using. And I don't talk about it a lot because I've come a long way from it. But it's good to identify that stuff because I always call this the disease of forgetfulness, if that makes sense. You know, so I remember times when Kelly talked about it, being over here in pain and thinking, you know, because this was my playground, the West End, you know, and I weren't one of them luxurious, had loads of money. I had to go out and get it. You know, I had to go out and get it, and I got it wherever way it was. And I talked about that connection. So I couldn't connect with yous, so because I couldn't connect myself. You know, I had no feeling or care for myself. So what I do, it didn't care who I hurt to get what I wanted. You know, I always say, like I was a little whirlwind, I'll go around there and I'd come around you, and I'm the most caring, lovable guy, but I'd come around there and I'd call chaos in your life. You know, because I didn't have that sense of loving for myself. You know, and I went on like that for many years, you know, in my addiction. So this was my playground. So I came over here, and I remember at times walking here thinking, please God, I don't want to do this again. You know, and I wasn't even religious. I thought, I don't want to have to walk around there 12 o'clock at night trying to get money just to feel normal, just to feel better. No, I remember time and times of doing that. I remember one day, talking about, I used to be 7 stone, and I'd be walking around, and because I wanted enough money for drugs, I'd go to a soup kitchen, and I remember sitting there one day, and these people looking at me thinking, like, they must be thinking, what are you doing here? You know, what are you doing here? You know, but that was it, because I wouldn't have enough money for my drugs. You know, and a lot of my using was around that, you know, to extremes. You know, I remember getting good, like, talk about false pride, you know, and I remember from a young age, because I remember what happened as a child, and Frenna has taught me not to take responsibility. And I remember from a young age, 16, being quite well, you know, going on tour with his bands at 16, going on tour with bands, doing quite well, you know, sort of having a job. So I had a job, I got paid every day, I went all around the country, and I was so arrogant at times. And I don't think there's a sense of false pride, you know. And I'd walk around, I remember with one band, they sacked me because I wouldn't put the equipment away because I got too drunk. You know, and I sat there and I laughed about it. Sometimes it was funny because I sat there and they were going pack. I said, I'm not packing that way because I was paralytic drunk. And so I messed up opportunities, you know, and I find people who's like-minded. I find people who drunk as much as me, you know, or used as much as me. And I didn't find her until about 17. For me, that was late, you know. But I remember one night going out to a club. We was over the West End there, a really nice club, and we was all in there, you know. And someone offered me this thing, and I thought, wow, okay, I'll have a little bit. My greediness has no bounds, you know. I call it, I've got this void, and it needs to be filled, so there's never enough, you know. And I took a little bit, and I went back, took a minute more, and I can't remember, I woke up. This is how it was. I woke up in a van going out with these people going to do a burglary and spewed all over them. And they were shocked because a friend had left me in there because he'd got this girlfriend and they'd left me in the back end there, you know. And that was it. And I'd found out this bloke who took a bouncer to put me out, put me in the van, you know. And about 2 days later, I went back again, you know, because it gave me a sense of purpose. It got rid of my fear. It got rid of my anxiety. It made me connect with people. I could be around you, my head would stop. Because I had this negative thought process. I always thought you didn't like me or you was doing something to me. Because I come from this place of fear where people hurt me. You know, my primary caregiver hurt me. You know, for whatever reason, she had mental health problems. So I come from this place that all of you are going to hurt me. And what I do, I'd hurt you before you hurt me, or substances calm me down. It's really beautiful because substances stop me from being in my head, stop me from being so angry and rageful. You know, so it's beautiful when I found this, you know. And like everyone says, for a while, it worked beautifully. You know, it worked. And I managed bits of my life. But then slowly I started losing people. Really good friends, you know, they stopped. You know, and as well as like goodbyes, they stopped. Contacted me, they stopped communicating with me, you know, and gradually from 17, I found myself at 25 incarcerated. Well, before that, I got incarcerated at 18, and another time incarcerated. And it was really weird because I'd get there and I'd sit there and I'd think, how did I get here again? It'd be in a stupor because, you know, and then the same old rigmarole, withdrawing, not telling no one, keeping the secret, you know, waiting for this visit to come, you know. It was funny because I remember this woman I met when I got in recovery, and I went back and she was talking to someone. She went, there he is. When I let him out, because I was like a little whirlwind, she said, when I let him out, Cyril, could I ever find him? You know, I used to be off hunting anything to give me that peace of serenity for that night. You know, I couldn't even sit in there and be at peace and think, you know. And there was times when I sat in there and life became good, where I got a job in there. You know, I felt normal. I felt a sense of purpose. And it's quite sad to say that. You know, I thought that was all my life was going to revolve around. You know, and I remember her telling someone that and going, look at him now. Look at the changes that this man has made now. You know, and it was really weird. So in and out of them places, waking up. And then I used to go to NA meetings. That's the only place I found NA meetings. And I'd go there. And the logic was I'd go there and you'd find drugs. Because you did sometimes, you know. So they come around and I put my name down, everything, and I go there and I'd sit there, and then it didn't happen because now people are finicky. Someone got out and that, they wouldn't come out, and then you'd be sitting there, and then I'd be looking at whoever doing the chair, despising them. Because I've come out here and they're all talking this stuff, and then I'd start arguing. You know, you're not like me, you're different. You know, and I remember one poor woman and someone I know is now recovering, I gave them hell. I sat there being defensive, the rest of us all did. Like, and I'm not being thankful. These people have took their time, you know, because I thought they'd been paid. I thought they'd come here to brainwash me, all this stuff. You know, they're going to tell me all this stuff, make me different. You know, these people, I don't even think they've used as much as me. You know, what do they know about that? You know, when I got signed up, I was a poly drug user, and I was confused because this big, long word. And then, so I asked, well, what's that? He said, you use anything and everything. And I thought, well, you're right. You know, I can't argue with that. You know, you was right, you know. Afterwards, when I went back to my son, I went, yeah, he's right. You know, he's not a liar. So, yeah, so they came in, these people, and I used to argue, and I used to, you know, antagonize them, you know, and it went on. And to go to the last days of my using, you know, I always say I was like this empty shell. I think he talks about, I was this empty shell walking around. You know, I had this thing where I used to walk across zebra crossings and just wish that I'd get run over. And it was sad. I yearned for death, but I was too scared to do it myself. But I thought drugs would do it, and I had plenty of times, and I was gone, but times of waking up in the hospital when they said, wow. Now, I remember one example I need to give. I left prison, I went home, and so they went, don't take this drug, this is too strong for you, you know, you'll die. So, drove them mad, so they gave it to me, they watered it down, I ended up in hospital. I remember leaving the hospital, coming out, finding my friends in an old hospital over in South London, in this big building, and I'd done it again. Twice in one day, you know, and so there was no bounds. And so the last bits of my using, as I said, I was this empty shell just walking around with no purpose in life, wishing sometimes I was dead, you know. Lost most of my friends, you know, all the people that loved me, because I always say this saying, I heard someone say it and I sort of stole it, it was beautiful, because there'll be 100 people in the room and 99 of them love me. And there'll be one who sort of dislikes me or may not want to connect to me, and I put all of my energy getting close to that person. You know, and then by the end of it, I'd despise them. You know, but the reality was, is because I despised myself. There was no love of myself, there was a self-hatred. You know, and then what happened, the 99 people that loved me would slowly go away. They'd have enough. You know, and why would someone put energy into someone who's not reciprocating it? You know, these interpersonal relationships. I craved for them. You know, I was a small boy in a man's body craving for a relationship, craving for someone to love and care for me, you know, craving for someone to communicate with me, you know. And because I had this self-hatred, I wouldn't allow you to get near me. You know, what gradually happened, this last time my experience in this place was, for the first time I listened, they said to listen. And I listened, and the first thing that someone said was, and I remember him, he said, if you don't pick up the first drink, you'll never come back in here. You know, and I sat there and I listened to it, and I reviewed all the times when I'd left, and each time what I'd done, I'd get this thing, I called it like my ready break, you know, this warmth. I'd get this stuff to, because I'd be in there, and I'd be dishonest how I was feeling, so I'd feel happy, but there'd be anxiety, there'd be a fear of living, a fear of doing normal things in life, you know, because I always remember being on these buses, and because it was a big part of my addiction, that, and you've got these little windows, and I've seen these people go to work, and I'd just sit there so sad thinking, why can't I just be him? You know, why can't I just go to work every day and be happy and contented? Why do I have this appetite for so much and everything? You know, and so when he said that, it made sense to me, you know, and I thought, I'm going to try that, you know, and what I'd done some treatment and the steps, you know, I started looking at my consequences. I looked at my thought process and realised, you know, because I used to go, all my friends would go, you're being brainwashed, you know. But it wasn't a brainwashing, because what I realised, they were suggestions. And so I could either push them aside or I can take on board. And that's what I'd done. Someone said something that's really beautiful to me. He said, you steal, didn't you? You're dishonest. You know, all your defects. He said, you got all that stuff. He said, do you need to retrain to do that? And I said, what do you mean? He said, you're an expert at that. And I went, yes. So he said, why don't you just put that in your back pocket? Because try this for a while. In 6 months, you don't like it. You know, when they said that misery, he said, you can go back to that stuff. He said, and you'll pick it up straight away. And it made sense to me, because I could. Every time I could pick that straight up. What was fearful to me was being clean, the communicating, the building relationships, you know, the doing things everyone done in normal day life. You know, so it mainly made sense, that 6 months, you know. And it was really weird, because we drove past somewhere, and I drive past it a lot. There's a place called the Royal Courts of Justice, you know. And my sort of start recovery was there. I went there, and what happened, it was really weird, because I put all this stuff in rehab. I'd done all this stuff that you didn't do. And I went there, and they went, oh, you can go home. And what happened in the process, it tested my higher power sort of thing. They made a mistake, so they sent me back for 2.5 weeks, and I'll never forget it. So Christmas Eve, they come, and they let me go, you know, just out of the blue. You know, and all that anxiety, and that fear, and that tension came up, you know, and I'd learned what to do, because I'd been, for a few months, I'd been in recovery, 6 months, and I had a lapse in between, my sort of, in my safe place, you know, and I sort of, went back for 2 weeks, and Christmas Day they let me out, you know, they let me out, because I need to say it, because I went to a house, And it was really weird. I was telling someone I had a house with. So I went there. I went to probation. I was all honest to them and said, I'm living somewhere. We'll go there for 2 weeks and it'll be all right, the usual stuff. My head again, look what they're doing. No one's really caring for me, you know. But what happened, I learned to take responsibility. Like I said, from 16, whatever happened to me as a child, I could have took responsibility. I could have done what I'd gone. I couldn't sit my blame. And I learned that from step four. I looked at my patterns of behavior. I looked at my thought process, you know. So they said all that, so I went back there, you know. My first mistake was I didn't make a meeting, you know. I found myself in the same place, sitting in the crack house with a bottle of vodka in my pocket. But for the first time, I remembered what that was said to me. Once I take that, all bets are off, you know. And it's really funny, the person came in there, he walked me out of there, I went back to the house where I was using, I got my head under the covers, you know, and I started going to meetings the next day, Christmas Day, you know. New Year's Eve, I remember going back there and there was people, you couldn't picture it. There was someone injecting, there was someone drinking a can of Kestrel, there was someone smoking a crack pipe. Then I went into the front room for a bit of solace and I took someone in and out there to use the toilet. I was really embarrassed, but they went into it. I went in, there was someone sitting there counting all these tablets, which I used to do. Like, I've got 15 of these and telling me that someone has stole one. I remember that, me doing that. Look, someone always stole from me. You know, I still say it now. I hit £60 one day somewhere. Couldn't find it, someone stole it, I found it again, you know what I done? I hid it again, and never found it to this day, you know. And this all happened in the house, and I left there, and my recovery hasn't been conventional, you know. So from there I moved into a pub, brilliant place for an addict to move in, you know. But I went through my process. What was said to me is attend meetings. Communicate my feelings. I've never done that story before. I put down, because I always had this sense of false pride. You tell no one nothing, you keep. That's what I was taught, you know. And so I lived in the pub. Funny, I had a manager who was an alcoholic. So in the end, I ended up managing a bar, of all places, you know. People saying to me, I was going to meetings, people going to, you're going to relapse being in there. The biggest thing that I didn't use, I connected, I got a sponsor. You know, from there I grew and developed, you know, because I knew I couldn't stay there, you know. The next thing, then there was another bar I managed, you know, but all the time I started doing voluntary work to build out that self-esteem. I joined H&I joined for a while, I'd done that for 2 years, you know, which was really soul building for me. I done PI when I learned a lot of the stuff that I'm doing now, you know. We went out, we done presentations, you know. I done a tea commitment. I remember my first commitment. So I done the same what I do with drugs. Because remember I said, if you gave me a drug, I wouldn't ask you what it was, I'd take it. So I was at this meeting and there was a commitment. They said, Jesus. So I put my hand up and then I asked the bloke next to me what it was. You know, didn't I just thought the same principle, put me out. Yep, okay, fine. And it worked, you know, and I done the GSR for a year. You know, and I've had a lot of commitments, you know, and my personal development. Recovery for me is about growing and developing. When I talked about using, it was about stunting the growth. It was a little boy in a man's body, you know, in a world, you know, doing all behaviors a child does, selfishness, stamping his feet when he didn't get his way, getting angry and argumentative, you know, not communicating his anger properly, not communicating feelings, you know, just not telling you and expecting you to understand how I felt, you know. So through recovery is about me growing and evolving and developing and changing and challenging some of them negative thought products. I still have them, you know, challenging them. You know, I've done that in the process. So I've done volunteering. I volunteered for about 3 years whilst in the bar. From that, I went back to school, you know, because I really found school difficult. But I gained the understanding and it was a shame and embarrassment of it. And now understanding it and overcoming that and that negative thought process, you know. And I went back and I've just started another master's, you know, for me, just doing from one day courses, diplomas, you know, and going and challenging that stuff and challenging my negative thought process around people, you know, because I could be around people and that negative stuff comes in. I'm not good enough. They all know I'm not good enough. No, it's not going to work. And I've learned it's okay not to know. Do you know that? It's beautiful, you know, because I thought I used to know. I was the one who called, I know. My phone was brilliant one day. He stopped me and he said, what did I have for breakfast? And I still tried to guess, you know, because I know everything, you know. But he tricked me and he said, I've done that to show you don't know everything, you know. And so it was about being humble, humility they talk about, listen to people, you know. And I learnt that, to ask questions and get over the emotion, you know, because that shame and embarrassment would stop me asking for something and it stopped me growing and developing. And I still have that today sometimes, you know, I still have that. You know, that little boy who wants to put his hand up and ask a question but he's too frightened. And through that he stays stuck in this place. Just like my addiction, without asking you for help, I'd still be in it. You know, so I started asking for help, I started accessing support. The biggest thing was me having interpersonal relationships, growing, allowing people to love me. Biggest one was loving myself. You know, in my step A, I was done a cheer the other day, was putting myself at the top of the list. It was really important for me. From doing that, I gained to love others, you know, and even my mother, because I did love my mother. You know, and I understood why she was cold, she had mental health problems, no real support, she had that false pride, you know, and it's really weird because we talk about step nine, and when my mother died, I visited her twice. All of a sudden she got cancer, she never told me, I was angry around that. She went to a hospice, once she demanded us there, she called me to tell me all this stuff about, because she was like practical around stuff, and when I, blah, blah, blah. The second time I went up there because I was stoned, I sat there for half an hour, couldn't manage it, left. And I had a dream on a Sunday night. I was living somewhere. I was living a house where I was using. And I had a dream that she called me, you know. And on a Tuesday, I found out she died, you know. And I had a lot of guilt and shame around that in recovery. And throughout my recovery, I had a friend who I used to go and see her. And she got clean, but she was still drinking. But I'd always go and see her. And one day I went up there, and she was in this hospice. And it sort of hit me, because it was the same hospice where my mum was. I went down there. It was the same room my mum was in. You know, and I made a promise that I'd go every day and sit with her, you know, even after work. So I'd go there, sit 10 minutes, we'd just talk, we'd laugh. And then one night, it was really weird, I was walking across and there was this church, and it's really funny, this church, because my mum around, because I've learned about history and the slavery and how my mum was, and she had this saying that those who don't hear must feel, and it's quite sadistic, because we would. If we hadn't listened to what she said, there'd be a stick. And I understood where that come from. And there's this church where William Wilberforce used to go to. It's all weird. And I was walking across there this night after seeing my friend. And it was this full moon. And I had this sense of forgiveness. I had this sense of, you know, okay, so I couldn't be there then, but I've done it now in something. And this sense of peace come over me. And this connection with the world. And it was really weird. It was one of the moments in recovery. I've had a few. I've had a moment in recovery. I was on a beautiful beach somewhere in Bali. And I cried like a baby. You know, I cried like a baby for the little boy who hadn't been loved and hadn't been nurtured, and then throughout his life was looking at that in from negative places. And someone says to me, he's looking for love from dark places, you know, and I've done that. And I can still do that today. Like I said, I can have all the love around me and still seek this negativity, you know, like I did with drugs, you know. And it was a really good process, you know. And for me, recovery is about change, you know. Changing. I'm not an angel. I'm not saying I'm an angel, you know, because it takes a process. It's always a process. Someone used to say to me, my friend used to say, recovery, there's no getting recovery. No, people go, like there's an end product. There is no end product, because recovery for me is like life. Life's no end. The end product is you're dead. So you have to grow and evolve and build as you go along. And that's why recovery is, through the challenges. And I always say, you know, I say to people, like, I'm a human being, not a human doing, you know, when I first come in recovery, because I used to think, well, I shouldn't feel that, and I shouldn't be this, and shouldn't do that, you know, and through the process, you'll grow. And I always say the big thing, because I always thought, you can't have the negative emotions, but I've understood, how would I know what happiness is if I didn't know what sadness? And I'd look at that, because I wasn't happy all the time, life would be quite dull. You know, life would be quite dull. So for me, it's getting in touch with both of the emotions and understanding, you know. And for me, there was a process of doing therapy for gaining some understanding of self. The fellowship does that for you beautifully with the steps. I gained an understanding of self, who I am, what I want, what my values were. You know, because I always wanted what your values were, I found, you know, as a child growing up. And so that was a process of change for me, you know. Some of the biggest things in my life, you know, because there was me and my brother, and I remember how it was, and we were so close. We both ended up users, you know, and we went through a lot of pain. And for me, there was something around the family as well. It weren't late into my recovery that I I started to love myself, and I started to change and grow and develop and let go of certain things. You know, and one of the biggest things I wanted was children, you know. But it's funny, throughout my addiction, I had none. Because I don't know, it's probably because I was too selfish. Maybe I understood unconsciously the pain that I went through as a child and didn't want to put them through that. You know, and I'm in recovery, I met someone, you know, and that was the first time when I started, because even through recovery, I didn't have healthy relationships because I still had that negative stuff. You know, and it took me a time, 10 years before I could start to have that. Once I became open, also, people were able to love me because I loved myself, my relationship changed. You know, I got two beautiful daughters and they just, I don't know how clever they are, my partner, they come out. I've got one who I call spirited, you know, she broke my remote. You know, I can get really pedantic. I can run remotes in three parts, and I don't know how you do that. There's no buttons, it's just, you know, in three parts. And but I love her, you know, I love her. And she knows how to get me with this hugging. And, you know, the beautiful stuff, I used to think that stuff around the warmth, and the ready break that I call drugs, you know. And my daughter gets me round the next time and says, "I love you, Daddy." You know, and I don't know, you can't put a price on that at times, and it's unconditional, and she means it. You know, she may want some sweets afterwards, but at the time, it's warmth, you know, it's a warmth, and it's just so nice, you know, and yeah, and for me, recovery is about change and all. I'm not going to be, because I can still be my critical mother, you know, I can still be negative. You know, I come in, it's really funny, my partner laughs at me, because I come in, and like they put, in our front room, we had a front room as kids, I don't know if anyone relates to this, but we never went in it, and people come round, it was beautiful and nice, and all this linen, and they'll come round and go, "You're so lucky," and I'd go, "I've never been in there." You look at it. I wouldn't tell them, but I'd be thinking, "I've never been in," and they go, "Ain't you lucky for your mum doing all this nice stuff for you, you know?" And I'd be looking, and there'd be a telly there, which we never ever turned on. Never ever turned it on, and I'd be looking at this thing, thinking, "Wow, this is good," and the drink. The only time I go in there is to steal the drink, but all this drink and this bar was in there, you know? And it was really weird. So I'd go home, and then my kids in my front room, they got all this stuff in there. There's paper, and there's drawings, and inside them is going, "This ain't right. Pick this up, it shouldn't be here. What are you doing?" You know, and I have a little moment, and I stamp around and I pick a few things. My partner just looks at me and goes, "They're children. You know, children play." That's what, and it makes me sad, because I didn't have that as a child. You know, I didn't have a childhood, and I realised, you know, I didn't really have a child, and not to blame, but it just didn't happen for whatever reason. You know, and so what happened throughout my life, all my using and my behaviour, was my childhood. I replayed my childhood till I was 40. You know, a long time, but I replayed it for so long. So, and it helps me to look and understand. You know, and I got some compassion from my mum. She's from Barbados, and I went to this place where she was. It was really nice that I went on the beach, and I spoke to Van. The neighbour was talking about my mum. And I realised that my granddad was so sadistic, and I can understand why she was how she was. You know, I really understand it now, and can have some compassion, you know, for her, and the difficulty she had, and what she tried to do. Because I've got, into my story, so I've got 8 brothers and sisters. I only found out about 4 of them. I found about 1 a year ago. This woman, I've got a picture, and I went, "Who's that?" "And that's your sister." "What do you mean it's my sister?" "I thought she was a woman who came to stay with us for 6 months and left, you know." I found out I've got 2 brothers in Barbados who lived there I've never met before. You know, I've got another sister in America, you know. I've got, yeah, 8 family. I went to Barbados and found all this stuff out, you know, which has been beautiful. I've been connecting with my sisters because they were quite distant from me. I didn't know them. All they saw was this drug user. All they saw was this person hurting their mother and didn't want to know. You know, and I connect with them now, you know, and it's really nice. I found out I had another uncle. That's how our secrets were. I met a cousin and she went, "My dad's, we haven't got no uncle." "Yes, you have. Why didn't my mum mention him?" But I can understand with her secrets and I can understand her pain. And I understood my own pain, you know, and I was an opiate user, was my drug of choice, because it soothed my pain. It made me feel all right. It gave me a sense of comfort. It gave me this sense of purpose. You know, and what I'm saying, I found it in NA, that sense of comfort and purpose in the end. You know, I say that, I don't go to many meetings, but I came here and it felt okay. I could sit here. And it was the only place I didn't get barred, to tell the truth, you know. I've been barred out of plenty of places. Don't come here for my coronation. I was barred from every licensed premises in London at one stage. I don't know how I done that, but they went, well, even a off license, you name it, and even if it was a licensed restaurant, I was barred from it, you know, for 7 months. You know, and NA, I've never been barred. I've never seen anyone get barred. You know, I've seen people say, okay, you're a bit drunk, you may need to go, but you can come back tomorrow. You know, and that's what happened. You allowed me to come back. You know, you allowed me to come back. You know, even when I made mistakes, I've seen it here. Even when many people make mistakes, they're loved. They're not punished. You know, people love and they go up to them and they communicate with them. You know, it's like, I call it strokes and hugs because I'm doing something and I look and it's all important around getting these strokes, getting affirmations. You know, and you get that in here. Even when you don't say it wrong, there's acceptance. You know, and that's really important for me because I didn't grow up in none of that. I grew up in a harsh environment and I became that. You know, I complained, but I became this harsh person who was negative and critical and distrustful. And through it, the boy's become a man. The boy's become a man. You know, I've got two beautiful children. You know, I say that I really love them. You know, and I do anything for them. You know, and I've got a beautiful partner today who I love and I've been faithful through. You know, and we have our ups and downs and we have our arguments and I've got my wild ways that she puts up with. You know, and my hiding and stuff, and every time something goes missing, someone stole it. You know, I blame the cleaner, I blame the nanny, I blamed all these people, anyone who comes to the house, I blamed her sisters, you know, I blamed the children, you know, everyone. And then I find it a week later, and then I go, well, they put it back. They put it back on purpose, I said, just to annoy me, you know, and she puts up with that, you know, she puts up with that and understands me, you know, and I'm saying that because them traits don't go. It's my mum's traits has been interjected to me and it's still there, but I can laugh at it today and I can accept it and I'll try and change it, you know, it's a beautiful thing around it, you know, and to enter any newcomers, you know, I came in here with a black plastic bag, 15 years, I've got two children, you know, I'm working at a really good job for me now, you know. I sort of started out in addictions, I'm into therapy, you know, and it weren't what I wanted to do, but from the volunteering it come, you know, I am good at it. You know, my head sits there saying I'm down, I'm good at it. You know, I took a risk to go, I left somewhere where I worked for 15 years because, like my drugs, I'll stay somewhere forever because it's peaceful and it's nice. And leaving was fearful and I left this job, you know, and I went somewhere else. And it's so much better. Today I've just left another job. And I said, well, I'll come back as a consultant, you know, you pay me what I'm worth, you know, and it felt scary doing it, but I've done it once and it's been really successful. It's really nice because one of my colleagues went today, the other day, you know what you're doing, you know, it's funny, but to hear that's really nice, you know, because I still have this negative down. She says, you seem to know what you're doing, you've done quite well here, you know, yeah, and I've just started another master's, it's really funny, I've got a mortgage, a nanny, I'm trying for another mortgage, you know. And that's important for me around that stuff, because my stepdad who lived with us for a few years, my mum was going to buy a house back in the 60s, he came and he took the money and gambled it, and that's what happened. No one in my family ever done stuff like that. You know, I've got one sister in America I just found, went to university, but I've gone to university, you know, and it's not bragging, but it's identifying this stuff from where I come from, because you said it, that place of homelessness, despair, I was there. Kelly said, you know, I was there. And through it, if you're new around, you come here and stuff changes, whether you like it or not. First thing is don't pick up, you know, and it was really hard for me. I didn't understand that. But once I stopped doing that, things evolve and change. Not to say it's been easy. Sometimes it's been quite painful in recovery, because I don't like pain. You know, I had enough of it as a child, I try and avoid it at all costs. But I've learned to embrace it, like I embrace the feelings, the anxiety and all that, because it's part of me being human. And it's part of me getting connected with yous, you know. And if you're new around, just keep coming here. This place does wonderful things, and I hear beautiful stories, and I hear people getting their children back, you know. And and you don't get that nowhere else. I don't know. I don't know. I don't get it nowhere else, you know. I work in a room of therapists, and they're the most just horriblest people you can meet. There's just no connection. You know, they're all arguing about this stuff and cheating them. And you think this is a place where they build spirituality and you think their connection. Sometimes it's the worst in the world, you know, and they're all talking about this and that, you know, and here I don't hear that. You know, we're all here for a purpose. You know, whatever our differences is, you know, whether we had an argument, we're here for a purpose in the end. And no one wants to see someone leave here and go and use. And that's the biggest thing around this, you know, because we've all been there and we know that pain. You know, so if you were new, just keep on coming, you know. No, there was nowhere better for me at first. I had nowhere to go, so I came here, you know. And it was nice. And I developed, I was allowed to grow in here. I found things to do. You know, and from that I've developed, I've got my own life, my own identity now, you know. And yeah, just keep coming back. I hope if you didn't get anything from it or you did, you know, it's what it is. Just come here and you ain't used. That's what it is. That's what I first learned. Some cheers I used to hate. To sit there cursing and thinking, but I was there, and then the bottom line was the positivity I never used, and I could always take something off it. It's just when I was in a bad space, I couldn't hear it. You know, see, if you're in a bad space, keep coming, it does get better. I'll leave it there.